You know, cholesterol is essential. Without cholesterol, you would die. Statin drugs are one of the most harmful drugs that you can take on reading labels. And he said, the best advice I can give you is don't buy food that has labels. Meaning, you talk about shopping the perimeter of the grocery store. You know, you just buy meat. So just buy real whole food, and you're going to be light years ahead of the standard American diet. You know, if I would have known when I was 18, I could have avoided a lot of this.
The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 52.
Yo, welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy's free, but the food's on you.
Everyone, Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. A few bits of prep, so to speak, before we get going here. Head over to my podcasts page, culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts. And there you can follow me on all the social media things and follow me on my Eating Liberty Facebook group. You can also subscribe to my YouTube cooking channel, and there I keep intermittently posting videos of cooking or baking and some gardening, but that's coming to an end. So we're getting the last bit of the tomatoes picked. Coffee drinkers can find a variety of sassy or sweet mugs at my Cranky Without Coffee store, linked on the podcast page, and for your Sunday brunch needs, you can download a copy of my Muffins e-cookbook, Foolproof Muffins, recipes that work every time. Just click the link, leave me your email address, and download the book. And with that email address, I will send you a couple emails a week. Another way you can support the show is with a few clicks of the mouse to your favorite podcatcher and leave me a 5-star rating and a review. That kind of engagement helps move the show up so more people can find it and listen. And lastly, when you are on the show notes pages or find the posts on your Facebook or Twitter feeds, please share them with your social media friends. That's another great way to get the show out to more people so they also can listen. Reading a recipe can sometimes make you feel inept because there just isn't enough information to help you succeed. You read the words, mix, fold, portion, bake, you go through the steps, but the finished product just isn't what you want. Education is like that too. We know the names, Roosevelt, Lincoln, Reagan, and the words, emancipation, depression, recession. But the part that makes it all come together is missing. Bite back against poorly written history with a master class membership from Liberty Classroom. Liberty Classroom offers drive time length audio courses on politics, history, economics, and even sci-fi and dystopia, and a course on Laura Ingalls Wilder. Each instructor at Liberty Classroom digs deep to give you the full account so your knowledge recipe is complete. If you are prepping for dinner, you can also watch the corresponding video. Click through with my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/biteback. With the master level subscription, not only do you get access to all the courses at Liberty Classroom, you get access to all additional courses for as long as the site exists. That access is for life. That's right. The master level is a lifetime membership which grows as more content is added. That means access to recommended reading and resources to accompany the courses, Liberty Classroom question and answer forums where you can get your questions answered by the faculty, monthly live sessions where the faculty answer your questions and discuss issues with you in real time, and there's a special bonus, the 435 audio and video lessons on government and history created by Tom Woods for the Ron Paul curriculum, purchased separately That costs $250, but it's a bonus for the master level subscription. It's a bonus for the master level membership. As an additional bonus, when you subscribe at the master class level, email me a copy of your receipt and I'll schedule a 1-hour Skype call with you so we can talk about cooking or baking. And I'll also send you a link so you can download my cookbook with over 75 recipes for hearty fall dishes, which are perfect for any time of the year, and a link to an ebook about herbs and spices. Use my link, culinarylibertarian.com/biteback, and bite back against the failed education from the state. Jimmy Clegg is my guest today, again. Jimmy was here back on episode 11, talking about keto and what he's learned from his reading about how the keto diet has impacted him by reducing Crohn's disease and prediabetes, and how many other people have had similar experiences from eating a ketogenic diet. Today, we are talking a bit more broadly, discussing three articles he posted on his Keto AF Ancestral and Fasting Facebook page. We put some attention to issues involving how some foods cause swelling or pain or inflammation. We're also going to talk about some interesting news about cholesterol and an article about the increase in C. diff in patients in hospitals. Primary theme of this talk is that whole foods, from tomatoes or spinach or meat, is entirely superior to processed foods. Welcome back, Jimmy. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, I'm happy to have you back. In case somebody didn't catch your first episode or just has discovered the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, give us a little bit of your background into how you got into keto. And then I have another question after that.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a researcher. I am just a guy. I was a math major in college. I was like everybody else after high school, and you know, my activity level dropped. After college, it really dropped, and I just started packing on weight, you know, maybe 5-10 pounds a year or less, and then just woke up one day and I'm morbidly obese, in denial. And I tried, you know, every diet strategy that popped up on TV, every counting calories, everything. Spent money on diet pills, and you know, everything works a little bit, and then it quits working, and then you gain it all back. And so I just kind of got complacent, and just kind of out of sight, out of mind. I felt good. I was just fat, obese, until I was around 41 years old. I got really sick. I won't go into the whole story, but I got real sick. My mom and sister and wife made me go to the doctor. At that point, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and I was having really bad problems from it. High blood pressure, prediabetes. When I say high blood pressure, it was like 210 over 130 at the doctor. Now, I've got the white coat syndrome, but, you know, once I started monitoring my blood pressure at that point, it was consistently in the 160s, 170s, over 100. And I was on 3 blood pressure medicines. And my doctor was really candid with me and told me, you know, you're not going to live to see 50 if you don't make a big change. But, of course, as we discussed last time, doctors are great. They just don't have any training in nutrition. So about all he could tell me was, you know, you need to do something. You need to eat less, move more, which is the typical advice. So I did what I've always been taught, what we've all been taught, you know, cut back on fat. And I lost a little weight, but I kept getting sicker and sicker with my Crohn's disease. And finally, I decided just to do, you know, I'm kind of analytically built-minded. I want to know derivatives and, you know, if I'm going to do something, I want it's going to work, what the process is, why it's going to work, and every aspect of it. So I just started doing research, you know, more and more. And I stumbled across a book called The Primal Blueprint by Mark Sisson. I fell in love with that, his whole philosophy, his whole ancestral outlook. I started implementing it, and I lost around 100 pounds within 8 or 10 months. And then it kind of slowed, but I was feeling great. My health markers were turning around, and I continued to research during that whole time. And that's when I stumbled across ketogenic diet and the differences between it and, say, Atkins and some of the older strategies, and continued to lose. Lost 200 pounds. I've fluctuated a little since then. I'm still 180 pounds down. Health markers have turned around, and I still continue to research to this day. So I prefaced this by saying I'm not a doctor or a researcher, but I've done over 1,000 hours on my own, just my thirst to know more and to keep up with the latest research. And I really feel a calling to my wife also to spread the word, because for various reasons, it's not common knowledge, even though it's kind of exploding in popularity now. It's still not common knowledge, and we're still working against government suggestions and government guidelines and just, you know, the status quo. So we continue, and that's me to this point.
Okay, and so you made the point of qualifying that you aren't a doctor or a researcher, but with your mathematic and sort of analytical aptitude, you, at least from the engagement you and I have on your Facebook page, and there's, when we talk some bit, you seem pretty interested in following not just the keto research, but something I'm going to get to in a few minutes, is other ways foods can have an impact on our bodies. When we talked last, we did talk about Nina Tai Schultz's book, The Big Fat Surprise, and she's doing her own thing, I guess, fighting against what seems to be a doubling down of the FDA and the diabetes industry and the heart disease industry of holding firm that the thing that has been making us sick is the thing that's going to fix us. Well, that is part of what we talked about last time, and it is a whole other episode. But I do wanted to get into at least a couple of different ideas that you and I have talked about. And so I think that there's first a group of people for whom keto is probably the only solution to reverse the weight gain and the disease. And I think in the case like yourself, that has been shown to be true. What about the people who aren't in that position but choose keto? What is the benefit to them?
Well, I think keto can have a benefit for most everybody. You know, the group you were talking about is what I would think. Well, I hate to bring everything back to obese, but definitely chronically obese people almost guaranteed suffer from insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome, fatty liver, pre-diabetes, diabetes. But it doesn't have to manifest itself as obesity. A couple of examples: Professor Tim Noakes, who was, I believe, he's a world-class ultra-marathon runner. He's also was kind of the guy for just nutrition, sports nutrition research in general, and he was a big proponent of carb loading and carbohydrate and the glycogen stores, replenishing them, all the traditional stuff, and he outwardly appeared to be very fit and collapsed one day and was hospitalized, and he was type 2 diabetic. You would never know it with his background, his appearance. And then, you know, while being hospitalized, he was exposed to Stephen Finney, Jeff Fuller's work. He already knew them, but the story I heard, they sent him a copy of their new book, and he read it. First, he called him a sellout. Inside, you know, in his head, he was like, oh, they're selling out. Because I believe the book was the new Atkins diet revolution that they had co-wrote, and I believe it was after Atkins passed away, and it was more of a transition into ketogenic from Atkins. And anyway, long story short, he read the book and he put out a message and said, everything I've told everybody to this point's a lie, and you know, and then now he's one of the leading researchers in ketogenic. And here locally, we had a locally really famous guy who passed away a year or so ago, and he was a high school football coach, had won state championships, and the guy jogged every day, just looked like a picture of health, and he passed away of a massive heart attack. So my point is, obesity isn't the only this, but definitely there is a group that is metabolically damaged to the point that ketogenic or some kind of similar approach is really the only, besides being medicated for the rest of your life, is the only option. But, you know, the research is coming out. We're in the infancy of nutrition research across the board. But, you know, the research is coming out. The neurological disorders, they're doing great research with the ketogenic diet and ketone supplementation on cancer research. They've got protocols with ketogenic diet and supplemental beta-hydroxybutyrate on cancer patients, I believe, in place of chemo, so radiation and ketone therapy, and they're having really good results with it. You know, Joe Rogan says that he drinks exogenous ketones before UFC event because it makes him think clearer and before his stand-ups. And, you know, so the neurological benefits are well-documented, but, you know, me having Crohn's disease, they're doing a lot of research with gut health. The active ketone is beta-hydroxybutyrate that we use for energy, and it's real similar to butyrate, which your gut biome can use as food. So beta-hydroxybutyrate seems to have a really good effect on your gut biome. And Dr. Ryan Lowry and Jacob Wilson and Dominic DiAugustino are doing great work with sports nutrition and the benefits of ketones on fat-adapted athletes. So it's really exciting now, and it's kind of progressing geometrically what they're finding out about it. So it's like every week something new is coming out to the benefits of the ketogenic diet and just having ketones circulating in your blood. So I guess that answered your question, how it can kind of, you know, you can be very healthy and still benefit from having ketones in your blood.
So I'm happy that you made the point about nutritional science being, well, kind of in its infancy. And I think that there's, well, that part's true. And I think that there's so much we don't even, that we, not me, researchers are learning that there isn't even a good base of knowledge from which to make extrapolations about what else is to know. So, you know, there's miles to go here. And one of the things that I sometimes forget, but I'm learning and reminding myself, that the human body as a system of systems is phenomenally complicated. But the other thing that we realize, and I'm paying attention to the more I talk to people who are knowledgeable about food and diet, is everything does have an impact. And one of the posts you posted, sounds kind of funny, was about different kinds of vegetables, or we're going to call them in terms of what foods are, either they're proteins or fats or carbs. Some of the carbs that people would eat, and not necessarily people on a keto diet, but in general, tomatoes and spinach and peanuts and almonds. And there's different, I don't even know what they are. There's different things, highly technical term, inside some of these plants. And so you and I had a discussion about spinach, as an example, has a thing in it that people who have a sensitivity to this would find the eating of spinach or other foods with this to cause an irritation or an inflammation. Whereas give me some spinach. This stuff is good. Almonds and walnuts. So let's talk a little bit about what are the things that are in this big category of carbs that is contributing to people's unwellness. They're getting inflammation in joints, or they're getting bloated in their stomachs. What are the things that, what is happening that we don't know anything about?
Yeah, I think the most, let's just call them anti-nutrients. Probably the most famous is gluten, because paleo really brought gluten to light. But a lot of people have gluten sensitivity, and I believe like really bad gluten sensitivity is celiac disease. And evidently, there's a lot more people that have it than we anybody ever thought. But these anti-nutrients can do a lot of things. Gluten is a lectin. Lectins are small proteins, and they can mess with your gut lining. They're small enough to get into your bloodstream. They wreak havoc. Your body sets up an inflammatory response to them. It treats them like they're a bacteria or a virus, and can lead to a lot of autoimmune problems. And then there's other things, like I can't remember what it was in the spinach. Like vegetables. Long story short, animals have fangs and claws and feet that they can either run from you or attack you, or a protective coating to protect themselves, where plants don't have that. Plants make chemicals, natural pesticides, and some of them in small doses can be really beneficial, but in chronic, sustained doses over years can be bad. And, I have a theory that there's a lot more to this ancestral, you getting your DNA and seeing where your ancestry lies. I would think that if your ancestry lied in close to the equator, that you'd probably be able to tolerate a lot more vegetables, because your ancestors would have been all year long able to access fruits and vegetables, whereas if like me, I just had my ancestry done in Welsh and Norwegian and Irish, and I'm almost 100% Northwestern European. I would think saturated fat and a lot more animal protein, and a lot. I probably have a lot of those sensitivities to vegetables, whereas even a more extreme case like the Inuits pretty much lived off whale blubber and had no access to vegetables, so I would think they would have really bad problems with this. So I think a lot of it has to do with your ancestry, and that goes back to the infancy of the nutritional studies. I've read there's several people that are doing DNA and diet matching based on your ancestry, and I'm really interested to see where that goes in the years to come.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me, and this isn't meant to rail on education, but it's not just education, but there's, and you and I and everybody listening and everybody not listening, we've been told for so long, the whole Ansel Keys, shift from butter to the so-called vegetable oils. And now there's an article I just read about why they're so bad for you. And you posted an article about cholesterol. Now, we've sort of shifted our understanding and knowledge of cholesterol as a quasi-informed society. But this article just came right out and said, high cholesterol is associated with longer life. And that's a headline designed to at least get you to pay attention. If not, at least click through. So tell us about this article and what's going on with cholesterol and why. Well, the why are they wrong is probably just politics, but how are they wrong?
Locally, we have a group that meets. It's keto, it's primal, it's paleo. I mean, it's just people wanting to get in better health. So I started, and I always talk. It's about an hour-long meeting, and I always talk 10 or 15 minutes and talk a little science, and everybody's eyes glazes over, so I keep it short. But I started the meeting off the other day, and I was like, you have a substance in your body that is responsible for the building and repair of every cell in your body. It's responsible for synthesizing your sex hormones. It's responsible for the synthesizing and production of vitamin D from sunlight. It produces the bile that helps you digest fat. And it synthesizes a lot of other hormones. So that's how I started it. And I was, you know, I said, can you guess what this substance is? And people guessed everything, you know, thyroid, and they blew their minds when I said it's cholesterol. You know, cholesterol is essential. Without cholesterol, you would die. And then I told the story of, it was, I believe, an ABC News anchor. Was it Russert? Was that his last name? Died of a heart attack a few years ago. And he had, he's on hydrostatin drugs and had bragged that his cholesterol, total cholesterol, was below 100. And he didn't know any better. That low cholesterol is not a good thing. And there's just, I mean, I hate to be a conspiracy theorist on everything, but statin drugs are one of the most harmful drugs that you can take. And they're also, if not the most profitable, in the top three most profitable drugs in the world. Billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars are profited off of statin drugs. So a lot of people have a lot to lose if the truth about cholesterol is revealed. I'm not being a conspiracy theorist. I just think follow the money, and money's driving this. And we can talk more about cholesterol if you'd like.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing for people to know. And you and I have talked about the other episode I've done with the biochemist Kyle Mamonis. And I just did one with him, episode culinarylibertarian.com/50. And we talked about metabolism. And one of the things that Kyle pointed out to me that I didn't know, and you know, this seems to be something not talked about anywhere. I mean, it's not exciting news. That the molecular makeup of the unsaturated fatty acid is such that when it adheres to the mitochondrial wall, that's causing some serious problems inside the body. And it's, now, this is something a biochemist would know if he did research on it. It's not an exciting topic. It's kind of boring as I think about cells and go back to biology in 10th grade. It's like, wait a minute, I don't want this. But this turns out these are things that we need to know about. And probably, I don't know if it's in the same bucket of that particular conspiracy theory, but I don't know if it's unwillingness. I'm not sure what it is, but the lack of information anyway, the lack of discussion about this seems at least to be troubling. And so that I want somebody talking about this that, hey, you know what? There's more going on here than just what we've been being told. And I think more and more and more we're learning that on many fronts, what we're being told turns out probably not to be in our best interest, which is another episode about how disappointing all of that can be. another article that you shared at some point was about the variations of the C. diff bacteria, which is being found around the world in hospitals and patients who are eating. Now, this is really strange. You go to the hospital because you're sick, and the hospital gives you food that makes you sick. So hospitals are feeding highly processed foods to patients who are already vulnerable by virtue of being in the hospital, and they're becoming even more ill. So let's talk a little bit about this problem of C. diff bacteria in hospital food and what's going on with that.
You know, I read the article and it fascinated me, but I haven't researched a lot on the topic. It just appears that, you know, we've been warned for years that when you get prescribed an antibiotic and you start feeling better and you quit taking it before you finish the whole dosage, you kill enough of the bacteria to knock out the infection. But, you know, theory is you're leaving the strongest bacteria alive, and so we're creating these superbugs. And it kind of seemed like it was there's this new strand of bacteria that thrive off of highly processed and sugary foods. And it scared me to death. I don't know a lot about it.
Well, I haven't been a patient in a hospital for a while. And even when I was a kid, when I was hospitalized back during high school, it was kind of the joke of, geez, don't eat the food, they're going to kill you. But it was mostly because it was bland and flavorless. But now I think it's apple. I mean, packets of applesauce and just sugar, endless amounts of sugar, which certainly is counterintuitive to what we think should be a healthy diet on any front. And you know, even if it's not a fat diet, an apple is superior to the applesauce, because at least it's how it came off the tree. So, you know, getting back to a whole food is going to be better than eating the processed version of the food.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, for people listening, I'm going to put the articles that we're talking about will be on today's show notes page, which is culinarylibertarian.com/52.
I can add a couple of things. The like number one, if the entity, the hospital or doctor or if school, any of that gets any funding from the federal government, they have to follow federal food guidelines. So and dietitians, like you would think dietitians, and there's a lot of really good dietitians, but you would think dietitians would be at the cutting edge of this, but they, you know, if they work for any kind of institution that gets federal funding, they have to follow the federal guidelines, which is not the food pyramid, it's My Plate or whatever they call it now, but it's still the same whole grains, 70% of your diet from fruits, vegetables, grains, from carbohydrate. And a funny story, not a funny story, a sad story on that was, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of the Obamas, but like I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of presidents, but I think Michelle Obama tried to do some good by affecting the quality of food in schools. I don't remember her dabbling in that and whether or not federal government should even have any say-so in what the kids eat is another subject. But she tried to kind of streamline and get the food choices healthier, which in the way she did that, the Schwann's company, the Schwann's Pizza, the Schwann's trucks you see that come around, they're the largest supplier of pizzas in the world to school, or in the nation to schools. It's a $1 billion industry for them. And under her guidelines, they weren't going to be able to sell their pizza anymore, and they were standing to lose billions of dollars. So their lobbyists got involved, and lo and behold, within a short period of time, Schwann's was back in the school because the pizza sauce was considered a serving of vegetable now, which is funny because tomatoes are fruit and not vegetables. But anyway, the tomato sauce on the pizza, in other words, the pizza that they provide was their vegetable serving. And then they were right back in the schools. I think the whole process took a couple of weeks. Schools didn't even have time to deplete their supply before they were allowed back in. But, you know, therein lies the problem. You know, you're fighting the government guidelines and you're fighting lobbyists and a ton of money being thrown out there. And then, you know, the consequences are being realized with stuff like these super bacteria and the diabetes epidemic. And I talk a lot about diabetes on my group, but Alzheimer's is right behind it, which is scary. And most, I say most, a lot of the researchers are now referring to Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes or diabetes of the brain. And you know, it could very realistically bankrupt our healthcare system between diabetes and Alzheimer's. I'm seeing 2050 predictions.
Huh. Well, the diabetes type 3, that's an interesting. I mean, that's chosen on purpose, and I think that's very curious. Just saw an article, I didn't read it, that there was an end, somebody found an end to Alzheimer's. So I don't, that's all I know is I saw an article, I didn't read it.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would. Last article I want to talk about is, and we may have touched on this a little bit, but it was about ketone bodies and intestinal health. And I know that was part of your early part. Is there something that you wanted to add to that? Or I will make sure that is linked to the show notes page because that's an interesting read. Is there something you wanted to add to that?
Well, I'm just keeping up with the research, and it looks very promising. But people need to know there's something called the gut-brain axis. And people don't realize, first of all, you have more bacteria in your body than you have human cells. So your bacteria are a lot smaller than human cells, but actually you could say you're more bacteria than you are human. And I believe like 80% of the hormones are developed or processed and made by the research. And a lot of our anecdotal studies that have been on diet for a significant amount of time, my wife included, have no longer a need for antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs. And that's called the gut-brain axis. They've done a lot of research on it because a lot of the hormones that control your mental health are produced in your gut. And getting your gut bacteria out of whack, the quote good and bad bacteria, not really been in a good equilibrium, could be the root of a lot of these neurological disorders. And so that's fascinating to me. My main problem is there's so much going on. We talked about the infancy of nutrition, and any of these topics, you could go down a rabbit hole and people make their whole careers on one of these topics. And being on the outside looking in, I mean, it's just so much to try. I just have to settle for trying to learn a little bit about everything, but there's so much stuff. The biochemist you had on, it was so fascinating. But you know, I'll never have a chance to touch any of the stuff that he's working on. It's just too deep, unless I want to focus on one thing, and our main focus is just getting people healthy. So you know, this stuff fascinates me, but there's not enough time in the day to cover all of it.
You know, the more I'm learning about the, and, you know, my parents, my grandparents, they, like everybody else, you know, somebody in an official sounding capacity says, we've discovered that this is better for health. And well, don't you want to have better health, citizen? Well, of course I do. So I'm going to follow the rules, and they're not rules, but they're for the recommendations. And I mean, you can't blame anybody, but so for all these years, my grandparents, and I remember my grandma probably had Crisco, and back then it was really bad. But you know, my mother was a registered nurse, and later on, after we were in high school, and you know, we did what we thought we were supposed to do. We grew a lot of our own vegetables, and we ate a lot of the food we put up. So, you know, from that sense, that's great. You know, frozen corn and beans or whatever else we could have. We jarred our own tomatoes, and that was better than going to the store and buying a canned whatever it was, because that was just terrible. But, you know, butter was a minimum. It was margarine instead of butter, and it was liquid oil instead of solid oil. And there's no way to know this, and both of my parents died from cancer. Now, I have no way of knowing if that wouldn't have happened anyway. It's impossible to tell. But part of me wonders that, wow, for all of the years and all of this misplaced focus on diet, what could have been? Well, you know, I don't keep myself up late for that, because it's wasted energy, because I can't do anything about it. But I do wonder. So I'm in here at our house. I do the best I can to eliminate as much of that stuff as possible. So, you know, it's really, really hard. If you read any package, and so people, and my, when shopping with the kids this weekend, and we were shopping, hit the end cap, and there's a can of Pringles for $1.20. Man, I love those things. So they're selling like hotcakes. One, because it's a convenient price. It's a fun shaped can, fits perfectly in the water holder at the treadmill. But if you read the package, it's almost as if the can's better than the stuff inside. It might be even mixed. And so between the bad seed oils and the highly, highly processed starches, it just reads sugar, 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 poison fat, sugar, 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 and some chemicals. Like, but this is what we're buying, and this is what's being sold. And so I don't even ask for a solution, because I don't know what the solution is. I don't have one, except be more informed. But you make the correct observation that to be informed now, well, it's both really easy to do, because we have the world at our fingertips, but holy smokes, there's a ton of information.
Yeah, I, you know, honestly, the more I research I say research, I'm not looking through any microscopes or anything, but the more I do research on the research, I think, like ketogenic, as we discussed at the beginning, ketogenic has very strong benefits for a lot of people. But I think vegetarian, as opposed to the standard American diet, going to a vegetarian diet, you're going to improve drastically. Even low fat. I mean, there's a lot of problems with low fat, but any whole food, paleo, primal, who I'm a big advocate of, vegetarianism, carnivore, ketogenic, any whole 30, any diet where you're getting away from the processed stuff and getting back to, you know, just eating real food. You know what? This is powerful. Somebody told me the other day, or I read it, either heard it on a podcast or I read it, but somebody wanted coaching on how to read labels for the ketogenic diet. And can you give me any advice on how to read these labels, because of all these, you know, the games they play. Now the big deal is they can say they're grass fed when they're feeding in these pellets that are supposedly made of, and they're still eating on concrete and everything. And same as the grain fed, but they're saying they're grass fed. Everything's okay. And he said, can you give me advice on reading labels? And he said, the best advice I can give you is don't buy food that has labels. You know, you talk about shopping the perimeter of the grocery store. You know, you pick up spaghetti squash, there's no ingredients list on that. You get the fruit. You know, you get a pack of meat. You just buy meat. So just buy real whole food, and you're going to be light years ahead of the standard American diet. But, you know, aside from all of us in all different parts of the nutrition spectrum, ideally, we just want to get healthier and help people get healthier. And there's no need for all this tension, and we tease a lot. But I'm super happy for a vegetarian. There's actually vegetarian keto out there. I'm super, super happy for them improving, because anything over the standard American diet is an improvement. And I think the solution is, like what we're doing right now and what our groups do, is a grassroots effort, because we're fighting tons of money and thrown around. We're fighting these big companies. You talk about your kids and the Snickers. If you walk into a convenience store and just look at the coloring, I mean, it's like watching a cartoon. All of the, you know, all the different candies and stuff. Stuff like Oreo is bland and just kind of stuck around the corner. So everything is advertised and marketed to, for us to spend money. And generally the stuff that is worse for us is the cheapest for them to make. And so we're fighting an uphill battle. So grassroots effort and just word of mouth is the way we're going to have to do it.
Well, you've given me a bit of optimism about my daughter, or my older one, has decided she wants to be a vegetarian. And what's really funny about that is she doesn't particularly like vegetables. So,
well, I think we go back to we were talking about the ancestral aspect. Very good with vegetables and never have a problem. Like me, anything weak inflames me. I already have some inflammation problems, of course. Crohn's disease is an autoimmune, but it's an inflammatory disease. But I eat one serving of a grain-based product and my fingers swell, and that's just the external sign. If my fingers are swollen, everything's inflamed. Whereas some people, and then you look at the glucose response. Like some people can eat a baked potato and have very little glucose spike from that, whereas me, it would send it through the roof. So I think everybody's individual, and it just takes people educating themselves a little bit and playing with it, never settling for any cookie cutter. You know, the more every day I'm bombarded with all these diet plans and products and all this stuff, and it's just, they try to lump everybody's individual, and everybody needs to just play with it and get educated and figure out what works for them. And to me, the big thing is that diabetes and this metabolic syndrome, Alzheimer's, all of that is a cumulative disease. That's why they call it, because it's in in the background, it's growing and progressing decade after decade, starting young until finally it manifests with the symptoms. Unfortunately, most people, when they don't feel the symptoms, it's out of sight, out of mind. So my big challenge is figuring out how to make people aware, ideally 18 or 20 years old, and start making the changes. And that starts, the only way I know to do it is it starts with the family and the parents. And somehow that has to happen because it's an epidemic. Diabetes, obesity is an epidemic. And if something's not done about it, it's going to be really grave for our country and the world.
One of the things that I have been, well, always in my mind, but in some podcasts it doesn't come up, but the focus is a way we can fix the world. It's just almost a hackneyed phrase now, but that starts at the dinner table and feeding ourselves. Starts with actually cooking something as opposed to having it delivered. And even if it's from a restaurant, that's still not the same as cooking yourself. And, you know, as a chef, yes, go ahead and make your own chicken stock, make your own pasta. Well, I know that that's not possible for everybody. And even if it's possible for me, it's not always possible with time. I understand that. And so there's perfectly acceptable fresh pasta in your grocery store. And is it commercial? Yes. If you're going to eat pasta, well, fine. It's okay to do that. Or eat the whole foods, but make something at home. Even if it's quasi from scratch, a bag of frozen vegetables and some stock from the store, and at least make a soup and not just open a tin of soup a can of soup. There's ways to put the additional benefit from that is you engage the people. So we're gonna have soup made from commercial chicken stock and frozen veggies and some other stuff, but we're gonna make homemade biscuits, or we're gonna make homemade keto biscuits, I don't know, whatever it is, getting the people involved in the thing, appreciating what food is and where it comes from, and bonding. This is part of what I think you're talking about, and this is part of what I'm talking about, is that we can fix a lot of stuff by starting with a community of one family. And
I agree. My certification, a health coaching certification that I'm working on, is through Mark Sisson and his Primal Health Coaching Institute. And he talks about the 80-20 rule. And so it's 80% compliance, 20%. I think, you know, you're talking about your kids and everybody is, you know, it's going to want foods that are technically not allowed, like on a ketogenic program. But like I said, ketogenic is necessary because we are damaged to people, you know. And if you don't ever get to that state, if you can intervene, like you're talking about, at the kitchen table with the parents and the kids, so the kids can 80-20 rule 20% of the time, which is significant, can eat their Snickers or eat their pasta or whatever it is, and maybe even more. But when you let that cumulative damage happen over a few decades, then it's probably 80-20 turns into, like me, 99-1. I swear, one cheat meal sets me back a couple of weeks now. And I've been ketogenic for 6 years, or primal and ketogenic for 6 years now, and I'm still damaged. So, you know, if I would have known when I was 18, I could have avoided a lot of this. But like you said, I think you're exactly right. At the dinner table, family is where it needs to start.
All right. Well, tell us again about your Facebook page where people can find you and follow you and get some information. Is your ebook still up on the page?
Yes, sir. Our main page is Keto AF. We're in the ancestral and fasting. And that's our page where we share a lot of research. We joke around a lot. People give NSVs, non-scale victories. People ask questions. We share a ton of recipes. And that's a group. It's a closed group, but answer 3 quick questions and you're in. We have another page called Keto Couples Kitchen, where we share a lot of recipes and, you know, we kind of coordinate our cottage food business through there. Everything that we make, we share the recipe for, because, and we've had some people rip off our ideas. We've got a few products that we have came up with ourselves, and people have ripped us off. But like I've said a few times, our main focus is getting people healthy. So we know everybody's not in our group. We've got people in several different countries that aren't able to come buy product from us at the farmers market. So we share all of our recipes so that people can make them themselves. And then I've got a new page that I just launched, and it's called Fit by 50. And I am just launched it on Sunday, and it's kind of going to be a blog/vlog of me finishing what I started and hitting all of my goals by the age of 50, which is 2 years from now. So I'm going to kind of open up to every aspect of my struggles and what I'm doing and what I eat and my thoughts and just kind of put it on there.
Cool. I did see the invitation for that. So, alrighty. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate that. And getting a little bit more knowledge out about eating balance and in focusing more on whole foods of any kind and ketogenics if you need it. And avoiding processed foods, well, at least more. I don't know if entirely is actually possible, but a reduction has got to be a good thing.
Can I have one more thought I would like to say? You can put it in.
Of course.
But one thing that really bothers me, I touched on it, is there's a lot of different approaches. And we talked about vegetarian and keto and primal and paleo and Whole30. A lot of different philosophies, but we're all on the way to get ourselves and people healthy. Even within the keto community, there's just, it needs to be support. People, if they land on vegetarianism and they get on a page and a group and they ask a question, and a lot of questions are newbie questions because, you know, they're true noobs and they're fragile. We've learned that there's a lot of hormones at play, and until you stabilize and reach kind of a balance, you know, you deal with a lot of hunger, a lot of anxiety, and, you know, somebody will come on and, like in the keto groups, and, you know, they'll say, hey, I'm drinking Diet Coke, I've quit Coke, and I'm drinking Diet Coke. We know Diet Coke is super unhealthy, or diet drinks in general, and sucralose wrecks your gut biome. We know that, but from 4 drinks a day that are 200 grams of sugar to none, they made an improvement. So don't, you know, if you're listening to this and you see somebody, don't crucify them. Let them get their feet wet. Let them get grounded. Let them, you know, the term is, I hate all these terms, but there's a dirty keto. So people eat Vienna sausage and spam and processed meats. You know, as long as they're staying to that 20 or 30 gram and getting ketosis, you know, let them do that. That's night and day better than the standard American diet, you know. If that help, if eating that spam or eating the Atkins bars or any of that stuff, which we know isn't the most healthy thing in the world, but if that is helping them stay compliant, let them do that. Let them get grounded, and then let them their diet evolve. And eventually, maybe they'll end up, you know, grass-fed meat and organic vegetables. But I think a lot of people that just jump on there, and I don't know if they're wanting to show how smart they are or what, but, or just like to be argumentative, but somebody will come on with an innocent question like, I instigate in my group a lot. I put a picture of us eating a sweet potato the other day and nobody bit. A few weeks before that, I put a couple of slices of watermelon and I knew I had the perfect response, and people were, you can't eat watermelon. It's, you know, it's not keto. It's got sugar in it. And I was like, you can eat Skittles if you want to. If you want to blow your 20 or 30 grams of carbs on a palm full of Skittles, go for it. I call them keto Nazis, but, you know, just let people learn and let people get grounded and let people evolve in their own diet. And, you know, I would really hate for me being a smart aleck or just being argumentative to dissuade somebody that, you know, and then they quit the diet and end up dying or getting really sick. I would hate for that to be on my conscience. So just main thing, just try to be supportive and just try to help people when they ask for help, but just support people. And it doesn't matter what diet they're on. As long as they're making a healthy effort to improve and support them.
Well, that's actually a really good point. And I think all of us, for whatever our group is, sometimes, I know that in some of my groups, the newbie questions I just roll past because I'm tired of answering them. And it's probably a nicer thing to not answer than to be a smarty pants. All right. Good advice. All right. Well, have a good afternoon. And thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And one more thing. Taxation is theft.
Indeed it is. Yes, it is. All right. All right, folks. That's going to do it. You can find links to the articles we discussed on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/52. Read them for yourself. Informed is better than not, and building a base of information is important for sound personal health decisions. I'll have a link to an Amazon page of Mark Sisson's books as well. There will be a link to Jimmy's previous visit, as well as both of Kyle Mamonis' visits. I'm adding those just because it ties in with the theme of eating and health. If you're starting a new style of eating plan or changing some of your eating behaviors in a major way, of course, speak with your doctor and get some suggestions or advice and benchmark of things to be paying attention to. These are things we want you to succeed with, and for that success, a good medical evaluation might be necessary. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.